This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Wes, we're now joined by another legend. I mean, a lot of them today on the show. David Teal joins us.
Unbelievable.
He knows this all.
No, I mean, where you want to start, Pack? Good morning, DT. Do we want to start with games being postponed, Pack, or where you want to go here? I mean, we got a myriad of things we could go with.
I think we should address that. Since we led off the show with that today, I think we should lead off with that. And David, for Virginia, they've been down this road before. Fake left, go right. But hey, it's the COVID world that we're all living in, especially in college athletics. You just really have to be prepared that literally no matter what you've got planned could change literally at a drop of a dime. And that's exactly what happened last night when Louisville called up and said, hey, listen, we can't go. So the good news is, because of flexibility in the league, we're going to get this game hopefully a week later. But again, Virginia's been down this road before.
They absolutely have, Mark. And, you know, whereas Virginia, I think, was clearly disappointed when the opener of September 19th against Virginia Tech was postponed because of a COVID outbreak, I think in this case, Virginia might be pretty happy by this postponement. You know, the Cavaliers have been nicked up, especially on the back end at safety with Joey Blunt and Brenton Nelson. This gives them another week to perhaps get healthy and maybe on the field. Lavelle Davis Jr., the terrific true freshman wideout, missed the last two games. This gives him another week of practice to hopefully get ready for Louisville. So I think this plays well for the Cavaliers delaying this until November 14th.
David, in some ways, last night listening to Vince Tyree's presser, I almost felt like, you know, Bronco Mendenhall has probably been one of the more, and look, everybody's cautious, right? I don't want to define levels of cautious, but Bronco Mendenhall is the guy that walks around practice with the 6-foot stick, right? To make sure everybody was kind of 6 feet away at times on the practice field when August started. Now he's kind of had a pause here and he's kind of had to be used to fluid, in other words, right? So it kind of fits their playing personality. I mean, here's a team that's kind of gotten off the mat after 4 straight losses, gets a win over Carolina. They got to wait a week. I think it'd be okay with him, maybe more so than others at this juncture.
I think it would be, Wes, and you know, you talk about having to adjust on the fly. Look at their quarterback situation. I mean, what, they've had 4 quarterbacks take snaps this year, and Keaton Thompson and Ira Armstead have really kind of added a running dimension. And, of course, Thompson with the fake punt last week against North Carolina. Guys, I was running some numbers last night. This is the 5th ACC game thus far to be postponed/delayed, but they've played 54. You know, that's hitting 90%. I think that's pretty good. I mean, you know, if you had said at the beginning of August, you'll get 90% of your games in, would you have taken that? I think a lot of folks would have signed up.
There is no question about that. I remember making a statement in the middle of the summer. Hey, if you can give me 8 games and that's all we get, I'm in. I think the league has done an exceptional job. And granted, the way COVID works, like I said, it doesn't care. And knock on wood, we're still going to get more games. But David, I agree with you 1,000%. It has been nothing short of amazing, the amount of games that we've had a chance to participate, watch, critique, thumbs up, thumbs down, whatever the case may be. I never would have thought in a million years that we'd been able to get this far into November with just a handful of stoppages and disruptions. It's been really a tremendous job by everybody associated in the ACC.
Absolutely. Medical personnel, the young people on the field, coaches, staff, families even, the sacrifices they've had to make. Gosh, we talked to Virginia Tech defensive coordinator Justin Hamilton this week, and he was telling us about how, you know, he gets tapped on the shoulder a day before his debut is scheduled to happen against North Carolina State. Coach, you're positive. And he has to go home and isolate from his family, which includes a week-old son. He said he's never felt more useless in his their life. So I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact sacrifices that families have had to make throughout all this.
Yeah, well said.
David, let's transition to the Hokies. You and I were both in Louisville last week and got a chance to see a phenomenal performance from Hendon Hooker in a game that featured explosive plays all over the place. Virginia Tech was kind of able to get some turnovers, force some stops, and also make some big plays of their own. It looks like this battery, if you will, of Hooker and Herbert has fit what Justin Fuente and Brad Cornelson really want to do offensively with that team.
No doubt. And, guys, this has been the most run-heavy offense in the ACC from the jump this season. But Saturday at Louisville, Wes, really took it to rare extremes. I mean, 51 runs and only the 10 passes, none of which, by the way, hit the ground. Hendon Hooker goes 10 for 10 for a buck 81. Just, you know, assembly line efficiency there from Hooker. But, you know, and part of that, again, was just playing to the opponent. Louisville's down six defensive linemen because of COVID protocol. So it was smart of Virginia Tech to really go run heavy. But you mentioned Herbert, 500-yard games in six outings. Transfer from Kansas has just been a revelation.
I know Virginia Tech and Old Dominion had some interesting tangles the last couple of years, including a major upset. Where do you put the rivalry in the Commonwealth with 25th-ranked Liberty in the Hokies this week?
Well, they've only met once, Pac, and it was Justin Fuente's first game
right
as Virginia Tech coach back in the 2016 season opener, kind of a sloppy game in Blacksburg. Justin Fuente got really steamed because the Hokies put the ball on the ground several times. So I'm not sure how much of a rivalry there is there. Excuse me. But these programs are due to meet several more times in the coming year. And here come the Flames and Hugh Freeze, 6-0. Hugh Freeze and Justin Fuente, no strangers. Ole Miss and Memphis, their respective last coaching stops, and they went 1-1 against one another in 2014 and 15. In fact, I think you could argue that Fuente's signature win at Memphis was in 2015 over the Rebs.
Yeah, it's an interesting you bring up an interesting point, and it's one that's if you think back in the coaching resumes of both, the Memphis Ole Miss thing is a thing too, right? I mean, that's not just your run-of-the-mill, hey, by the way, we're going to open the season type game. The Memphis Ole Miss thing is a thing, and therefore there may be a little bit more brewing at noon on ACC Network than most would think with those two, right?
I couldn't agree more. It was interesting, Wes. I don't know that I've ever heard Justin Fuente rave more sincerely or at greater length about an opposing player the way he did about Liberty's quarterback, Malik Willis, the transfer from Auburn earlier this week. Yeah. He thinks the world of Willis as a dual threat quarterback. And of course, last week, the Hokies had, you know, more than their fair share of troubles with Malik Cunningham. And oh, by the way, on the horizon, another dual threat in De'Ara King of Miami.
Malik Willis.
Here we go.
Here we go. Yeah, here we go.
Nightmare.
Perplexing.
Yes. One thing about.
Yeah.
While Liberty. While Liberty is 6-0, the combined record of Liberty's six opponents is 4-28. So the Flames are taking serious step up in competition on Saturday.
Well, hey, listen, you better be ready to play is all I know. In this day and age, when you get a chance to play, you got to go full throttle and consider yourself lucky.
Yeah. David, here's one for you. We have heard coaches and some administrators, I think, a little on a quieter front, if you will, athletically. We have heard a lot of coaches talk about the schedule here in the last two or three weeks. Louisville, Virginia Tech, both coaches last week, very candid about they'd like to play more opponents in the league and things like that. Any sense that with a new commissioner coming on board sometime this summer officially, with the possibility of a 21 football schedule being kind of blueprinted after the new year, that we see some sort of change in the ACC football scheduling structure?
I think there's a very good chance, Wes, although I don't know if it would be for 2021. This was very much on the front burner before the pandemic hit. In fact, I think it would have been front and center at the spring meetings at Amelia Island in May had not the pandemic occurred. Of course, now they have other priorities. But once we regain some sense of normalcy, I think, and especially with the new commissioner, as you mentioned, I think this becomes very much hot button. I had a league athletic director text me last week after I wrote about this subject, and he basically said, we're on it.
Speaking of schedules.
Yeah, I think this is.
Go ahead, Wes.
I was going to say, is the question 8 or 9 games, or is it the rotation of the 8?
I believe it's the rotation of the 8, and I think there is at least a bubbling sense of momentum, especially after this season without divisions, to do away with divisions, assign every team 3 permanent rivals. You then rotate the other 10, 5 on, 5 off. You play everyone every other year, and a young man in his 4-year career would visit every ACC institution.
Speaking of schedules, we're inside 3 weeks of the start of, we hope, the college basketball season. There's a lot of rumors floating around about a schedule to be released at some point in time, perhaps by next week. It is kind of eerie, isn't it, that we're this close to hoops, and yet we still have so many unanswered questions.
We absolutely do, Pac. The couple things we know are, one, they plan to play the full 20-game league schedule, and two, the rotation will be as it was announced a little more than a year ago. So the teams you were scheduled to play twice remain the same. The teams you were scheduled to play road only, home only, no surprises there, but it's just going to be more along the lines of, okay, when do those games fall, and how do you squeeze in whatever non-conference games you can?
Yeah. It is weird. Surreal. That's the best way to describe what we're experiencing with basketball. David, this is a note from a day or so ago. One of the real characters of all of college baseball, but also one of the most important figures in Virginia Tech history, passed away. And that was Chuck Hartman, who, golly, so many years the head baseball coach there, but also such an influence on that athletic department. I remember Dave Brain telling me great stories about Chuck Hartman. I know he was there so long, it was almost like he was there when the Hokie Stone started being put on the ground. But your memories of Chuck Hartman and what he meant to the Hokies and what he meant kind of to ACC baseball after, you know, Virginia Tech finally got into the conference.
Wes, you're right. And I don't know what it is about baseball coaches and managers. They're just such characters. And the last time I saw Coach Hartman was when Virginia Tech introduced John Scheff as its baseball coach. And Whit Babcock's dad, Brad Babcock, the longtime coach at James Madison, who also recently passed away, he too was at the news conference. And there sat Brad and Chuck, you know, telling old war stories and games against one another. And I just sat there and soaked it all in. It was priceless and so charming to watch. Just these two former coaches and rivals reminisce, just baseball characters to their core.
Yeah. All right. David, thank you. Always great time. Appreciate the time.
Gentlemen, be well.
All right. David Teal covers the ACC for Richmond.com. It's the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Always a great resource for us as we move to maybe more knowledge about basketball here next week. We'll hopefully get some of that.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Appreciate David Teal. Always joins us. Always informative. Always has something that we did not know. That's why we love having him on the program. Mm-hmm. Wes, field hockey for seems like 100 years. Karen Shelton and North Carolina have been the standard. But you know what? We did Notepad last week, and I told you my game of the month in the month of October in all of ACC had nothing to do with football.
Yeah,
had everything to do with field hockey because Louisville knocked off North Carolina, snapped an unbelievable streak. We've been talking about snapping streaks a lot today involving Notre Dame, but it was Louisville that knocked off North Carolina and really kind of set the stage for this week's ACC championship.
Yeah, the Cards are the top seed at the ACC Field Hockey Championship, which starts later today at Karen Shelton Stadium in Chapel Hill. And Justine Sowery is the head coach of top-seeded Louisville. She joins us from Chapel Hill this morning. Coach, number one, welcome to the show. Number two, congratulations on a great regular season.
Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. Very unusual situation that we're sitting here watching the games today, having a bye. Just really proud of what we've been able to accomplish this season. And, yeah, we'll see what happens. Obviously, it's a whole new tournament now, and we need to be ready to go.
The fact, though, that you knocked off North Carolina, and they've been so good for so long, and they still are, and so are you. But the fact that you won that match from a mental standpoint, we know physically you're talented, but mentally, that's got to put your team in a great spot knowing that, hey, guess what? We've seen them, been there, done that. You got to now deal with us.
Yeah, you said at the beginning of the show it felt like 100 years since they had been beaten, and it certainly, across the field hockey community, it felt that way as well. And I'm a big believer, you know, for every win, you're closer to a loss, and it was going to happen at some point. I did say to a couple of different people at that time, I'd much rather it be in a championship moment than the regular season. You know, it did the world of confidence for our group. We traditionally play a great game against Carolina. I think both teams play pretty open, fluid hockey. It's always a great game. But, you know, now we're here at the Karen Shelton Stadium on their home field. We've got to get to that point first, but I know that they're going to have extra motivation as well.
All right, so here's the and we've talked about this with several fall sports, Coach, and this part to me is really one of the more intriguing. You've played 8 games, 6 in the conference, right? I mean, you're now going to have the ACC Field Hockey Championship, and then there'll be this thing in the spring that's the NCAA type event, and we'll get to that later. But what's it been like going through this fall with an abbreviated schedule and having success and yet trying to kind of keep focus on the next thing, I guess?
Yeah, it's been very difficult. I said to one of my captains earlier, a couple of days ago, how are you doing? And she said, it's been a long 5 months. And I said, how about a long 7 or 8 months? It's been quite the process. Mm. I think at the beginning of the preseason, everyone was still thinking, are we even going to pull this off? And I had to shift my mindset because I was not serving our student athletes very well. As soon as we shifted our mindset, I mean, and you play in the best conference in the country, I mean, it was all our focus was absolutely on this season. Every game is a championship game, and it's exactly what we needed, any opponent needed. I'd much rather be playing than sitting on the sidelines. So, yeah, all of our focus is on the fall. We don't even know if our regular season title will count. It might be the spring season, but for us at the University of Louisville and our field hockey program, it counts. No game has been easy. It's been like any other year. But it's definitely been extra stress and extra pressure. But I give a lot of credit to our student athletes. I'm so happy. Have so much gratitude toward the ACC and our university for making this happen and to getting to this point. And it's just incredible that we're about to play in our championship game.
Justine, you know, we talked about this earlier, that the mental discipline that has been in store for every student athlete, not just football. We're talking about all the Olympic sports. I'm not sure necessarily that the fan at home, when they turn on ACC Network or whatever sport they will love to watch, understands when it comes to college athletics this year during the COVID, the amount of attention to detail away from your sport that you've had to make the ultimate commitment of, hey, listen, I can't go party with my buddies. I can't do what a normal 18 to 22-year-old would do when it's supposed to be the best time of your life, that you've had to make such an incredible commitment just to have the opportunity to participate. Forget about wins and losses and championships and all that stuff. I mean, it really is a tip of the hat to not only the student athlete, but everybody associated at the institutions that have also made the commitment to make sure everybody is safe. I mean, it is really one of the most incredible things I think we'll ever experience. And that's true whether you win a title or you're in last place from a standings perspective. It, in some respects, that's almost secondary, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, we said that if we just get on the field again and we start playing, that was going to be a win. But the level of attention to detail and the support from top to bottom, from our training staff and sports performance, you know, to the, our facilities guys. But, yeah, coming back to our student athletes, yeah, it's they've had to focus on a whole nother level. And what they usually love about what we do is just the camaraderie, the team dynamic, those special little incidental moments where you can hang out in the locker room or have meals together or go to a coffee shop together or team building. All of that went away. And it's so hard to see how people are doing just by seeing their eyes up because of the mask that we're having to wear. So it has been really challenging. It has been very wearing at times. You know, in some respects, I think some are looking forward to the end of the season. But we've had some pretty good conversations in the last week or so. And again, just you've got to keep your head where your feet are at. And just, you know, really reflect on how far we've come and just stay in the moment, because this is a really special moment for our program and to be able to compete and wear the Louisville uniform. It's, you know, it's something that, you know, is going to really hold a tremendous value for us moving forward.
Okay, Coach, let's the mental side of getting ready to play and now the mental side of playing. The top seed in the tournament, so you and your team can go watch one of the quarterfinals today and kind of digest the field, if you will, see who you play tomorrow in the semis. Now, but I guess here's the trick to it. The last regular season game didn't probably go the way you wanted it to, a loss to Syracuse. So what did you learn that now becomes applicable to your team this week in Chapel Hill?
Yeah, I think any opponent that we're going to come up against, if they took a, you know, evaluated that Syracuse game, you know, we didn't play our best hockey. And so I give a lot of credit to Syracuse. They took away our key players. You know, we've relied on our spine, our backbone of Meg Schneider, Ali Bidding and Mercedes Pastor, and they completely nullified our strengths. So each of those individuals evaluated their game. Our role players around them have to step it up. The bottom line is we have to play Louisville field hockey regardless of how teams play against us. And I thought Syracuse defended us very, very well. So we got to take care of the ball. And then defensively, we're a little bit light-handed right now due to some injuries, but that doesn't matter. Hopefully, you know, we're at the ACC tournament, so that excitement, adrenaline should take us up at a whole nother level. So each opponent, you know, present something a little bit different. And you know that even Boston College that came in at the bottom seed, they can win the entire tournament. That's how deep our, you know, all of our, the teams are. So it's going to be about matchups and it's going to be on the day and you better be ready to play.
By the way, you get the winner of the Wake Virginia game this afternoon. And so with that said, for folks who are going to tune in, have some fun with this, what do you expect to see?
Well, that's interesting, actually. I think Virginia overall, they're a little bit tricky and unpredictable. They haven't been doing as well in recent weeks, but they've got a talented slew of players and it's tournament time. So for me, they're really unpredictable and it really their team revolves around Rachel Robinson, who's one of the best players in the country. And so, but I will say that Wake Forest, Jen Averill somehow gets that team going, and they've just continually improved throughout the season. If we match up against them, it will be interesting, because the last game that we played against them, we played in a swimming pool, and neither team were able to play their style of hockey. So it's going to be like our first matchup again. So it could go either way. I think it's a toss-up. I do think playing Virginia three times and winning three times is a tough ask. But, you know, we'll have to give it a go, whoever we play.
Jesse, before we let you go, I have spent some quality time in the Commonwealth and love it there, especially the bourbon. But I can't quite place your accent. Is that Eastern Kentucky or Western Kentucky, that accent?
Well, I can put on any accent, so wherever you want me to be from, I can put it on.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to figure out, is that a Paducah? Is that a Louisville? Is that a Frankfurt? I'm trying to pinpoint the whereabouts on that accent from Kentucky.
I think I got it. I think I figured it out. It's not far Eastern Kentucky where you go to Ashland, or far Western where you go to like Paducah. I think it's more like Southern. Like, it's Southern, like, Australia accent. That's where I'm going to go.
Maybe that's
Australia.
What it is.
How's that? How'd I do?
You're getting a little closer. But, when I moved to the United States, I started in Louisville. I went to California. I was back to Virginia. I was up in Massachusetts and back to Kentucky. So my mom thinks I sound totally 100% American, but I don't know what accent I have, to be honest.
Well, you're having great success, and we hope it continues for you. And thanks again for spending some time with us this morning.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
ACC Network, Packer and Durham. There's something about that Australian accent, right, Wes? I mean, you could listen to it all day. Read the phone book with an Australian accent. It still sounds good. Sounds good.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
All right. Earlier today, we talked about...
She was fantastic, by the way.
No doubt.
Really enjoyed talking to her.
Yeah.
She was great. Yeah.
Very good. We talked about streaks. And, of course, Louisville had just knocked off North Carolina in field hockey, snapping an amazing streak. Yep. But earlier today, we talked about how often in the history of college sports, Notre Dame has been able to stick their nose in somebody's business and go, guess what? Today or tonight, it ends. We're here to end your streak. And again, Saturday night in South Bend, Clemson comes rolling in there with crazy numbers, 50 straight wins on Saturdays, 39 straight regular season wins. The list goes on. It's crazy. Notre Dame's won 22 straight at home.
Yeah.
Something's got to give here from that perspective. But when you go back through history, Wes, and we did this earlier, we'll do it again now. It is amazing how often Notre Dame is at the front and center. And it's not just a football thing. It's multiple sports, multiple decades, where the Irish have been at the point of ending a party. They've done an amazing job in that department.
Yeah, I mean, Miami had a 36-game regular season streak snap, the Catholics versus Convicts game. You had the 30-game win streak Texas had. 1971. You had a 57-game winning streak that Oklahoma had. 1957. All those ended by Notre Dame. Then basketball. They've done it there. 88-game win streak snapped. Digger Phelps beat UCLA. Then you get to women's soccer. North Carolina had a 92-game win streak snapped by Notre Dame in October of 1994. The win streak, by the way, wasn't snapped in a loss. It was snapped in a 0-0 draw. Then you had Clemson women's hoops this year snap Muffet McGraw's long win streak, 58 home games on December 29th when Amanda Butler's team won up there 71-55. Now, we ran a graphic earlier in the show today. I want to show you what's on the line for Saturday night, because Saturday night is a combination of streaks, good and bad, really, for both schools here. Because Notre Dame's won 22 straight at home. Clemson's won 14 straight true road games. But pack those bottom two we touched on briefly, and I kind of want to expand on this. because this catches your eye. Brian Kelly's been there a long time. Clemson is winless in their last 12 road games against the AP top five. I think that surprises people.
All time. Not the last 12. I mean, since they've been playing, since Dirt, Clemson playing a top five team on the road is at zero in the win column. Zero.
Yeah.
Brian Kelly, of course, had terrific success everywhere he's been, including Cincinnati, who, by the way, you may find in the top 10 if you're not paying attention. But he's done a tremendous job at Notre Dame. But he's got a zero in the win column against top five teams, period. So something's got to give Saturday night with crazy win streaks and everything else, even losing streaks.
Yeah.
So, again, not only is it 1-4 from a national profile standpoint, not only has it got huge implications as far as, hey, are you getting to Charlotte? And we may very well see this game again 6 weeks from now, for all we know. December 19th, we may get Notre Dame Clemson part two. We don't know. It'll play itself out.
That's right.
But something's got to give Saturday night in South Bend, Indiana.
All right. Now, in recent history, recent being 40-ish years, there have been some interesting Notre Dame games against ACC schools. Joe Montana, known for the comeback. First one ever. Pac, we've talked about this game. Joe Montana came off the bench in Chapel Hill. Notre Dame came from behind to beat North Carolina 21-14 at Keenan Stadium. Started the whole Joe Montana, you know, legacy of comebacks, right? And all the things he did that took him to Super Bowls in San Francisco, and even in his later career at Kansas City, he was known for the comeback. Very first one, Chapel Hill. Notre Dame and Georgia Tech played to a 3-3 tie in 1980. Again, underdog Georgia Tech, heavily favored Notre Dame. How about Notre Dame beat number one Pittsburgh in 1982? Great, great Pitt team, 31-16. I mean, there are a couple others here, but I mean, we're talking about Notre Dame against ACC members here. It's amazing kind of how the ACC members, oh, let's roll the videotape here, Pac.
Love the old school stuff.
Wow, look at that. Is that Pitt Stadium? You think that turf was hard, by the way?
Oh, yeah. I used to work there. I've been there many, many times, the old Pitt Stadium. And let me tell you something. You land on that ground, you'd break an ankle. I mean, that thing was hard as a rock. But I love the old school stuff.
Saw Alan Pinkett, the long TD run.
Yep.
Man, look at that.
You know, you mentioned Joe Montana. Wes, you mentioned Joe Montana. And as incredible as his career was, if you just played word association with Joe Montana, the thing I think about is the pass and the catch to Dwight Clark. And how ironic, a Notre Dame guy throwing it to a Clemson guy. And here we go this weekend with Notre Dame and Clemson. I always think Joe Montana and that pass and Dwight Clark, may he rest in peace, one of the most epic plays in the history of the National Football League. And Montana did a lot of great stuff, obviously, with the Niners and so forth. But that play will be etched in your mind until they put you in the grave, right? It's just one of those kind of plays, if you remember, if you're old enough, it was just one of those moments, surreal moments. And how ironic is it this weekend we get Notre Dame and Clemson?
Notre Dame and BC, 1993.
Number one.
Remember Boston College getting that win at South Bend? Eagles wind the clock down to the very final play of the ball game.
And remember now, Notre Dame.
And BC.
And remember now, the week before, the Irish knocked off Florida State, old Bobby Bowden, in one of the epic games. And then all of a sudden, it was followed up with this game that you're going, oh my goodness, you got to be kidding me. So. The combinations of Notre Dame and the ACC that we're giving it to you here, and I know they're a football member for the first time ever this fall. They've been a conference member now for a handful of years and change. But it is amazing how many similarities we start connecting dots of Notre Dame in these incredible moments. And I think it's probably one of the reasons why fans have a love them or hate them attitude towards the Irish. I mean, they've been doing that independence thing for so long, crisscrossing the country and ruining parties left and right. You either loved them because they were on all the time, or you hated them because they absolutely made your life miserable. So Very few times you run into somebody, you ask them about Notre Dame, and they go, "Yeah, whatever, I don't care." You seldom get that answer. Like, even Reese Davis joined us yesterday, and we asked him about, "Hey, remember the first time you've ever went to Notre Dame?" And he talked about how he could not stand the Irish growing up in Alabama and so forth. It's just the way it is. And, you know, Notre Dame, the Yankees, there's certain teams, Dodgers, there's certain teams that you just, you either love them or hate them. It's the way it is. So
Dallas again, Cowboys.
Cowboys, another one. Perfect. but it's a short list that gives you an immediate reaction that you either go thumbs up or thumbs down.
I think we have to put this next game on this list, by the way, Pac, because Josh Macri, one of the Lumberjacks, is a graduate of Syracuse University. So we rolled the video from 2008. Look at this. We even got the Cameron Dantley game-winning 11-yard touchdown pass with 42 seconds left. I knew we would. I mean, here we go. Roll the tape. Syracuse on a cold winter day. Look at all the people bundled up at Notre Dame Stadium. Look at the orange getting after it, Pac. Huh?
Like the unis.
24-23.
Like the uni.
Yeah, I like those jerseys too.
Yeah, that's a good, really sharp look.
Of recent note, in from the upset category, a few years ago, the New York Giants quarterback went to South Bend and won a game and looked good doing it.
It's true.
Charlotte, North Carolina's Daniel Jones, by the way, brought Duke from behind. Blue Devils got big plays. Sean Wilson, huge play here. Duke scrambled back in the ball game, and the Blue Devils found a way. 38-35 was the final. That's Deion Jackson. He's been there forever, by the way. There's Daniel Jones throwing TD passes. Look at this one. Swoop, right down the seam.
Can't wait. Saturday night, man. That's going to be good. I wish Clemson had more dudes.
It's gonna be a blast.
I wish they had all their guys ready to roll. But you know what? We may get that game again, like I said, December 19th. But it still should be a great football game.
Packer and Durham.
And another interesting guest list today. I always enjoy our guests because we hope throughout the course of 3 hours you learn something about the league you didn't know. And it may not necessarily just be in football.
Right.
We try to cover all the teams, all the sports that are going. We got a lot of championship stuff happening this week. Obviously, the biggest game in college football involves the Atlantic Coast Conference this weekend with number one at number four. And again, we'll highlight that game and all the others tomorrow. But I just hope that the cool thing about this show, Wes, is that you have a chance to meet and hear from coaches and other student athletes of Olympic sports in particular, because for the first time ever, they now get a platform to showcase the great skills. And we've bragged about, from a national perspective, how tremendous this league is in so many different sports.
Yeah, great point. And field hockey starts today, later on the network. You can get a full sample of, we talk about soccer, Pack. Doesn't diminish what field hockey is in this league in terms of its national stature, right? How many times have we seen North Carolina, but other schools also make a run to the NCAA Field Hockey Championship? So, you know, keep an eye on that as well, and we look forward to more tomorrow, as I said, with Brady Quinn and Divine Diablo joining us on the football side, along with other guests as well. Which brings us to a question that we needed answered here in the last week or so. You know, when Trevor Lawrence was announced to have had the coronavirus a week ago, it put America on notice for a star quarterback to take the stage last Saturday in Inland Empire, California freshman DJ Uiagalelei, right?
Correct.
And it was said differently by a lot of different people. Little did we know, though, that Anish Shroff, who has done so many different things to help our program over the last year and change, that he would rely on his daughter to help America.
Uiagalelei. Uiagalelei. Uiagalelei.
How great is that? That is so great. That is so cool. And then the man himself said,
and how,
yeah, DJ.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. Congratulations to Anish and Anish and Faye. The tweet says she is such a cutie and she did an unbelievable, amazing job. I love it. And that's from DJ Uyangalale.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. Team
Congratulations
Schroff.
To Anish and Faye. They've they've gotten their daughter set to go.
Yep. Team Schroff to the rescue. Thank goodness. As usual. Getting the job done.
Oh.
So good.
Okay. From the Twitter world regarding college hoops, and we just asked David Teal, front of the hour. What do we know? Maybe next week we'll know. Maybe some more basketball news tomorrow. It's so weird, but it is what it is, right? Adam Zagoria, Iona and Hofstra have agreed to a 3-year series from 2020 to 2022. The first game will be December 23rd, Pac. The venue will be determined by a rock, paper, scissors contest performed on social media by the school's mascots.
Hey, whatever works. If that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do. I mean, seriously. Whatever makes you happy, man.
What if we did the ACC football schedule that way?
No, let's not. I think we're above that. I think we can handle that. But, you know, in this crazy world of the COVID-19 pandemic and everything else, you know, you just try to get through the next day. And if you need to go rock, paper, scissors to figure it out with mascots, I'm not going to be critical. You do what you got to do. But I am kind of anxious. You all right, Fuller? I am kind of anxious to see what the basketball schedules are going to look like. I mean, like I said, we're inside. Yeah. 3 weeks, and you know, football is certainly important in November, no doubt. We've got championships going on all over the place with Olympic sports, but I am kind of curious to just take a sneak peek to see what hoops going to look like.
Hofstra beat Iona, by the way, 2-1 in rock, paper, scissors. So Hofstra will host the first game on December 23rd.
It's good, good for them,
yeah, yeah. Come on, isn't there something about this that I mean, come on, we were talking about you driving a golf cart at Cross Country Championship. There's got to be you've got some sort of creative thing in your mind tinkering around there that we can do something to determine the location of something here, can't you? We can come up with something.
Yeah, but I mean, again, if those two schools, if that's what they want to do, that's cool. I mean, coming up with something creative is never a problem. That's never a problem.
Yeah.
But I would like to see the schedule.
All right. Yeah, the schedule, yes, I'm with you on that.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.